Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Can you see it? The big smile on my face, and that is because I am talking to an old friend, Chicago dog trainer Wendy DiCarlo, who has been doing this a very long time. But Wendy, for as many years as you've been training dogs, I don't think you've ever had to do this through a pandemic before, I would guess.
No, I have not. This is a first. Challenging,
yes.
But it's working out actually very well.
How is it working out? So here's what happened. At the beginning of this thing, and you and I would be very excited about this, and not only in Chicago, but all over the country, really, or at least in many places around the country, people said, I hear the animal shelters need some help. So they were fostering dogs, they were adopting dogs, dogs of all ages, which include puppies, of course. Then they're bringing in these dogs into their home, sometimes with other dogs there. Some of these dogs adopted, some of them foster, some of them are now going back to shelters, and many are foster failures, so to speak. They're sticking with the family. Well, especially for the puppy part of this, you know, socialization is so important with puppies, but if you're not going anywhere, how do people socialize their puppies? Have you found that there have been more issues?
So overall, and this started, of course, you know, begin for us, it started the beginning of March, and yes, shelters emptied out, all of that was true, and so many puppies. And then puppies were continually coming in, you know, puppies were being brought in, and more puppies were being adopted, and everybody was told not to socialize their puppies initially, for fear that COVID could be transferred, could possibly, you know, you just never, quite honestly, they didn't know. So they told people not to go out and socialize their puppies with both people and dogs, which is a huge disservice to dogs in general, but, of course, safety first. And so what we've been doing is, you know, for us dog trainers, you know, Steve, you're well aware of this, too, is that the big joke is we are well aware of 6 feet because that's the length of most of our leashes.
Yes.
So we social distance is a natural kind of thing. And so as all of this went on and more information became available, what we started having people do was confidence-building exercises and things in the house, in the yard, so that their puppies were being given different things to do. It may or may not have included another dog if they didn't have one in the house, but just various exercises. So obstacle courses that you could do with items at home, just things like that that were different, building their confidence. Then when they would go out on their walk, and we always say with socialization, if you were to do purposeful socialization in a difficult time, scope out friends, relatives, neighbors, people you know, people you trust, who have well-balanced either adult dogs, ones that are fabulous with puppies, or other puppies. Everybody's healthy, of course. You know, their vet checks and vaccinations are in place. And you can do some socialization while you're out on a walk. You've got 6-foot leashes. So you're already 6 foot apart, 12 foot if, you know, the dogs are together and you're standing at each end. And you can walk with the dogs. They get a little, hi, how are you? They keep on going. If all goes well, then maybe you get to go into a backyard or an enclosed space, not indoors, but outdoors. And that's how we were handling it. In the very beginning, just getting puppies acclimated to life and not keeping them in such a little bubble.
Absolutely. You know, so the good news is if you happen to live in a city, and I would argue in some ways, city puppies are inherently more socialized than those country dogs. And that is because they're constantly exposed to the garbage trucks, the buses that go by, maybe even the elevator trains, you know, the red line or the brown line or the purple line, whatever it is. I mean, there's a lot going on and a lot that's noisy that's happening, and a lot, whether it's the rollerbladers going by or the baby carriages going by or the mail carrier, there's always stuff happening and stuff that's happening with people of all ages, people that look different from one another, and that is all great for puppies to be accustomed to. So I think people were taking walks, but they were afraid to let people touch their dogs, which we now know, for the most part, is absolutely unnecessary. We know that now. To your point, we didn't know that at the time. So finally, we're beginning to sort of open up. Can you offer dog training in person, dog training classes at this point?
So, in phase four, if you have a place that so indoor versus outdoor, if you're outside, you can do lessons. Private lessons are easy to do outside because you can social distance, wear masks, all of that, and it's, you know, you're in an outdoor environment, which everybody is outdoor anyway, walking. So outdoor is easy. When you offer puppy classes where it's a group class, typically they're inside, and so it would be dependent upon where you are. And for me, just as a for instance, all of the facilities that we work at, none of them are, only one is allowing the public in, and that's one of the park districts, and they are, I will just say this, their cleanliness is stellar. Their program for safety has been top-notch. They have worked on this, and presently, we are the only class that they're going to allow into the building. And it's a huge space. So what we do is the puppies and owners are all given all of the guidelines ahead of time, which pretty much everybody knows. You stay under your limit, which if it's people, you're under 50. Well, there's nowhere near that. But you have plenty of space in between. So in our case, you know, we've got 6 to 10 to 12 feet in between everybody. And when they're working, there's even more. So we can do puppy classes safely as long as the environment is safe, as long as everybody coming in understands the rules, and there's no questions. I mean, we do what we do to keep it safe.
I want to talk about puppy classes in general. So, first of all, in puppy classes, the puppies sometimes do get an opportunity to play with one another. Again, that's COVID safe. Are some puppy classes, just in general, having nothing to do with COVID, too much? I mean, so there was one period of time where people said appropriately, all these young puppies need to play, they need to interact with one another, they need to understand how to communicate with one another. All true. But what happened, in my opinion, is some puppy classes then began to have no structure whatsoever. They really weren't puppy classes, they were play sessions that sometimes got out of control.
That's exactly right. And you know me and you know our classes. We are all about structure. We're fun, but we're all about structure. And so what does happen is when puppies, even adult dogs, get into these situations where it's nothing but play, 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 it's all about them interacting. And some dogs play beautifully. Some dogs don't. They can pick up habits that can be good habits, bad habits. Some dogs are actually a little bullyish in class, in play situations. I'm not going to say in class, in play situations. And, you know, it depends on how well it's monitored. I firmly believe you can allow puppies to play and have a great time, but the owners always need to have that little element of control where if you call your puppy, they come to you. And that's what we do, is we allow socialization with that little element of control where the owners are always part of the process, part of the fun, and it's enjoyable for everyone. We make it very worth puppies' while to leave a play group and want to find their owner.
Well, isn't that key in general? The most important thing I think that any puppy or adult dog needs to know is to come when called.
That's key. I mean, we work with that day one in every class that we teach and in every class. So if you're in a 6-week or an 8-week program, every single week that recall is reinforced. Because it is so important. You know, what if they slip out the front door or get out an open gate? Accidents happen. And so to have that ability to just get your puppy to come back to you because they want to, they enjoy it, is the best thing ever.
You know, you mentioned something about some puppies bullying others in classes. I wonder, now think of yourself as a human instructor here, teacher, or just think back, Wendy. Wasn't that long ago when you were in third grade? And there might have been a bully. There might have been a class clown. There might have been someone who always knows all the answers. I mean, is it the same thing? Are there puppies that are sometimes bullies? Sometimes there is a class clown, and there seems to be that Dalmatian always gets it right, even ahead of before I ask.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know that in dog terms I would put, you know, when we say bully, it just means, in my opinion, it doesn't mean that the dog is being a bully. It may be that dog is a rougher player and maybe not appropriate for another dog. And so, you know, and therefore, you know, label the bully, whatever. But yes, we see everything in class. You see the clowns, that it's like nothing phases them, and they're always in the midst of everything. You see the shy dogs, who are just kind of taking it all in, but not wanting to participate in the process. And the most important thing, and this is the key to what I think a well-run puppy class is that these puppies are never forced into a situation that they're not comfortable with. So if you have a puppy that is just, you know, going in and having a great time, wonderful. If you have a puppy that's hanging back, you let them watch. You let them observe. You reward the watching, and then maybe, you know, you find another puppy in class that's a little bit lower key, and you let those two get to know each other. It's all about just making sure everything runs smoothly. When we do socialization, or in our, we call it safe socialization skills, and we always want the owners to be part of the process so that they see and they know what's going on, and then they know how to handle things should it happen outside of class.
So how do you choose a dog trainer, and how important are these classes? We will find all of that out. Wendy DiCarlo is here on WGN, and we will be right back. Dog trainer Wendy DiCarlo on WGN, talking about dog training classes starting up again. How do you choose, Wendy, the right class for you?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you rather than just going online and registering for something out of the blue, is that you call. You call and see if you can talk to the instructor or the trainer. And, you know, you ask questions, you know, perhaps how long you've been doing it for, the type of training that you do, you know, if it's positive reinforcement, if there's any kind of punishment, you know, used, just getting a good feel, and also a good feel for yourself on how the person responds to you. Ask questions about the class. You know, how many are in class, and how is it run? Is there ever, you know, is it a free-for-all, you know, puppies playing like crazy, or is it more structured? You know, and again, my answers would always be structure, and, you know, I do look for experience. That would be one thing that I would definitely do. Safety, what safety measures are in place, not only now during this time, but for the puppies in general.
The way I've put it before, and you can comment on this, if the people don't have smiles on their faces and the dogs aren't wagging their tails, something is wrong. And here's what I'm getting to in the importance of positive reinforcement dog training. There are still aversive trainers out there that rely on punishment.
That's true. And, you know, that's what we always say, too. We always say you should be having fun. Your puppy should be having fun. With that said, you know, when you get a puppy or, you know, a dog that comes into class that maybe is a little shy, you know, owners, of course, are concerned, and then you might not see a smile. And then how do you adapt that particular situation into the class? And that's where space is wonderful. When you've got a big enough space, you can create safety zones if need be, where owners just feel comfortable, their puppies feel comfortable, and little by little, you know, gradually, everybody starts to get included in a way that makes sense to the puppy. And for us, it's all about it being fun for the puppy, and so that they have a desire to learn, that they find it fun, they actually do learn, and the owners are enjoying the process.
I want to talk a little about positive reinforcement, exactly what that is in general, and do dogs learn better that way?
So I think they do learn better. So positive reinforcement basically is whenever your puppy learn something or does something you like, maybe you're not even teaching it, that they're rewarded in some way that's meaningful for them. And what I always tell people is positive reinforcement is determined by your puppy. So food, it's got to be a food that your puppy likes. If you hand your puppy a treat and blah, they spit it out, at that moment, that's not positive reinforcement. You need to switch to something else. Praise, really nice praise can be a wonderful positive reinforcer. Petting, if your dog likes petting, toys. But again, it's what your puppy likes that makes a difference. If that's their reward, then you're likely to get more of whatever it is that you're teaching. It should become more frequent.
Do you think that we could teach our dogs more than we give our dogs credit for in general?
Oh, I think so. I mean, they're so smart. You know, everything that they're watching us. If they're, you know, when they're with us, they're learning stuff, if they're awake, every waking hour. So just thinking of all the different things that we could teach them. I mean, you know, you could be so simple to put away their toys. So, you know, just different things that, you know, you see tricks on TV and
to
you're like, oh, my dog could never do that. Well, yes, they can.
To put away their
toys. If they took the time to do it, they certainly could.
Wow. to put away their toys. I don't know. That's pretty cool, Wendy. Of course, in our case, our dog does our income tax. But then again, that might be why you may never see me again. I don't know how well that'll work. Wendy DiCarlo, dog trainer, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Steve, for having me.
Dr. Jen Ogier is Vice President, Medical Affairs and Commercial Marketing at Antech. I'll tell you, if you've had dogs long enough, you have symptoms that are consistent with a veterinarian saying, that could be inflammatory bowel disease. But to my understanding, Dr. Ogier, inflammatory bowel disease has always been difficult to specifically diagnose.
Yes, good morning, Steve. And yes, that is correct. Inflammatory bowel disease is a frustrating and complex disease that is difficult for veterinarians to make a diagnosis in a quick and non-invasive manner. And we're very excited that at Antech, we're launching a novel blood test that will allow veterinarians in a more affordable way as well to determine whether that dog's gastrointestinal signs of vomiting, diarrhea, maybe even weight loss if it's persisted for long enough, and anorexia can be actually determined to be consistent or not consistent with inflammatory bowel disease with this new assay. So it's an exciting innovation from Antech, and we're very happy to bring this to the veterinary practitioners and to pet owners.
Well, it is so exciting because previously the way in which inflammatory bowel disease in dogs was diagnosed would either be far more invasive than a simple blood test and take much more time. And if your dog is suffering, and if you're suffering because you're at the other end of that diarrhea, which is possible, or the vomiting, then that you don't want something that takes time. You want a more immediate response because there are medications which can help that dog.
Of course. And I think it's frustrating, not just for the veterinarian who is unable to actually diagnose these symptoms or even provide relief for that dog and that pet owner, because it is distressing. These symptoms are recurrent. Pet owners see their pet suffering. If we're able to now actually provide a test that relieves some of the lengthy procedures, expense, and frustration, and use a test that's based on evidence-based medicine to help pet owners have better care and better recommendations in terms of treatments and maybe even dietary trials quickly and more cost-effectively, then we're able to get that dog return to more normal health in a faster, more effective manner. And obviously that inspires confidence in a worried pet owner, and it is also allowing us to provide that ongoing commitment to the ultimate best care for that dog.
So IBD, or inflammatory bowel disease, we know is an upset gut. It's a very unhappy gut, but that's not a very scientific way to describe it. What exactly is IBD?
Very good question. So inflammatory bowel disease, or what now is the in-vogue term, chronic enteropathy, it is basically an inflammation that happens in the lining of the intestines of dogs. And what happens is there's this abnormal interaction that can happen with the immune system. It can happen with bacterial overgrowth in the intestines. I think people have heard about the microbiome, so we get basically a lack of regulation of normal bacterial flora in the gut, and they end up with something called dysbiosis. But then there oftentimes are also dietary and environmental factors that may contribute to this inflammation that happens in the lining of the intestines and then lead to these abnormal gastrointestinal signs.
You know, dogs can vomit. Dogs may be uninterested in food. Dogs can have diarrhea. But there are dogs that have less interest in food and vomit and have diarrhea for other reasons, too. Is this another reason why this is so important to be able to diagnose this?
Absolutely. So dogs can vomit, have diarrhea, as you say, even lose their appetite for a number of reasons. And we do encourage veterinarians to continue to do a complete diagnostic workup on those patients, ruling out things like parasites or bacterial in overgrowth, or even looking for things like gastrointestinal foreign bodies. Maybe the dog's eaten something in the garbage and has gastroenteritis. But ultimately, when these signs persist for 3 weeks or longer, then we know we're likely dealing with some chronic, likely relapsing gastrointestinal condition, which could be something like chronic enteropathy or inflammatory bowel disease. And so we encourage veterinarians and pet owners to think about doing this test in a timely manner.
Excellent. Dr. Ogier from Antech, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure.
Hey, baby, it's hot out there. Didn't Frank Sinatra once sing that song? I think so. But he didn't sing about protecting our dogs in hot weather. I'll sing about that when we come back. So if it feels hot out to you, I can assure you it feels much hotter out to your dog. Now, there's a lot of factors involved in that. First of all, why is that true? Should stop there and explain that. You know, so we perspire, we just sweat. And that's actually sloppier, but a more efficient way to cool than panting, which dogs mostly do. Yeah, they sweat a little from their paw pads and from their tongues, believe it or not. But it's very inefficient compared to us. So they, just because they are dogs, have a more difficult time just right there, keeping cool. Now, there are other factors involved. First of all, the age of the dog. Young, active dogs, they do better in general than very old or specifically elderly dogs, just as the same as in people. If it's very, very hot outside, right? Folks that are of a certain age have a more difficult time and they feel the heat a bit more. And it's no different with our dogs. The biggest factor of all likely is the dogs that are brachiocephalic. What does that mean? It sounds almost nasty, doesn't it? Those are dogs with those pushed-in faces. They look like they've walked into a wall almost. They have limited airways, and they have a limited ability to breathe, actually. Well, I don't know. It's crazy, but it's true. So I'm talking about the bulldogs, most especially the bulldogs, French bulldogs, Shih Tzu, Pekingese, Boston Terrier, the pug for sure. Lots of mixed breed dogs individually, some of the pit bull dogs, Affin Pinschers. I mean, the list really does go on. And those dogs, especially the larger versions or mid-sized version of those dogs, have a very difficult time. So much so that if it's even 75 out and we feel, hey, it's comfortable, it's wonderful, that bulldog may go around the block and be just like totally wiped out. And when the tongue is hanging sort of at the side and the dog is actually hypersalivating, then you know you have a problem. Please stop. Please don't go too far. Please pay attention to your dog. We've had exceptionally hot weather at times so far this summer, and I've seen people with dogs that are really on the verge of heat stroke almost, you know? And that can happen in dogs far more easily than in people. Oh, I continue. So dogs with darker coats, they, in general, have a more difficult time. Larger dogs. So the very large dogs, just because they are very large, they do have a tougher time keeping themselves cool compared to, say, smaller dogs. So that's right. A Chihuahua compared to a Newfoundland, no comparison. And the Newfoundland also, or those, some of those larger dogs have very heavy coats that, hey, 20 degrees below zero, they're happy as can be. The Malamute, Siberian Husky, right? If it's 120 degrees or feels like it, well, actually, here's a good way to say it. If it's 85 degrees, it may feel for some of those dogs like it is 120 degrees. So pay attention to your dog and be careful. Talk to you next week at 5:30 on WGN.